So for the first half of the day here this morning, through this sitting practice that we'll have together, each morning we'll have a talk outlining the practice and then a guided practice. And then you'll have a chance to take those practices into the forest and into the hall and into practice on your own. And we are going to begin the retreat with the practice of metta, as I mentioned last night, and using metta, kindness, friendliness, loving kindness, if you wish, as a way to anchor, as a way to stabilize, as a foundation for practice. Many of us who are used to or are familiar with foundations of mindfulness practice, four foundations of mindfulness or satipatthana, it's very common and quite popular to use body as a foundational practice. And as I'm sure you know the drill, the instruction that we all learn quite at the beginning is we're sitting, being present, the mind wanders, you notice that the mind wanders, and you gently return that back to an anchor, which would generally be your in and out breathing or just the body, which is a great foundational practice, and we'll move into that practice this afternoon. But for now, we're going to use a sort of light touch on the body, so recognizing the body as a ground, as a foundation, as a presence, but seeing if we can use this metta quality, this sense of goodness, the sense of kindness, this way of treating ourselves well as the field or the foundation where we want to start to come back to. So we come back into that, we come back into that, we come back into that. And there's a couple of ways that you can think about that in terms of practical application. And the first really is using metta as a refuge. We can usually find that metta is a very common refuge, because if we look at the Pali term or the idea of refuge, we talk about refuge as a safety or as a place of rest, a place to abide, a place to be. And for some of us, many of us perhaps, the body maybe doesn't feel that way. Maybe our bodies have been painful or complicated or abused or a wide range of experiences that some people actually don't experience the body as being necessarily all that safe. And people also maybe find breathing to be too ephemeral or too moving. Breathing is moving, so it's not a very necessarily stable foundation or anchor, because it's in-breath, out-breath, and then we can often find that we might start thinking about our breathing and wondering if we're breathing right. And all of that kind of mental proliferation can arise around that. So metta as a refuge, as a sense of ease. So the way that I work with metta in a foundational practice is thinking of metta as ease. May I be at ease. May I be at ease with whatever it is that is arising in my experience. Whether it's my sleeping leg, my wandering mind, my complicated emotion, my cloudy day, my hunger, my fear, my whatever arises, it can be met with that, I see you, it's okay, I recognize. To recognize with friendliness, we could say. And as an actionable item, metta, as a characteristic, a relational characteristic, it's to attend with interest. So there's an interest always associated with metta. And if we think of metta as friend, if we think of a friend, in which all of us probably have many, what is it about being around somebody who's friendly or a friend that feels so good? It's because they pay attention to us and they're interested. Your friends are interested in what you have to say. They're interested in what's going on with you. They're interested in your joys, your sorrows. They're interested in your life. That's what a friend does. So how do we take that same quality characteristic process to ourselves? I'm interested in you. What's going on? Oh, I see you're having some pain. I see that you're tired. I see that you're having some struggle. Oh, I see that this is really going very well for you. I see you and I'm interested. Easy. People who are friendly, people who have cultivated lots of metta. Have you noticed that some people in this world are just easy to be around? I love those kinds of people. I'm like, oh, you're so easy to be around. You're not judgmental. You're not harsh. You're not demanding. You're not complaining. You're just cool. Right? We want to try to see if we can practice in that way of being at ease with and not falling into the trap of thinking, may this be easy. It's not about things being easy, because you'll find that much of what we'll do here maybe doesn't feel easy, feels difficult or challenging. But may I be at ease with that which is challenging, that which is painful. And that can allow us to arrive into an experience of safety, stabilization, groundedness, presence, where we're not putting demands on the present moment. We're not making demands on experience. We're not criticizing or judging our ability to be in the moment. We might have to be at ease with, may I be at ease with my judging mind, my critical mind. So metta, it can be a refuge in this way. It can be a place of resting. And also, the practical applications on your life, if you can rest in the experience of metta in the ordinary moments of your life, I find it to be much more beneficial than resting in my breathing. Although I often do both. As we'll see, that's where we're all headed in that way. So metta as an anchor, as a place of returning when we've become distracted, when we become lost, when we become wandering in our mind, when the mind takes us out into the abstract, into the past, into the future, into the worry, into the fear, into the regrets, into that kind of sleepiness quality, that non-awakened state. When we come out of that, we come out of that with ease. Say, oh, that was a good one. That was 17 minutes of, you know, rehearsing an argument with somebody. That was, oh, may I be at ease. That was interesting. Try not to do that again. It's okay. We could say in a very colloquial way, metta is just about this quality of okay. It's okay to be here. It's okay to be hungry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be lonely. It's okay to be happy. It's okay to be angry. It's all okay. No demands, no expectations. Just this moment as it is, right here, right now. Wow, the sun's coming out. That's nice, right? Ah, out breath at ease, settling in, starting over. No past, no future, no time, no expectation, no concern. No doing it wrong, just here, now, birds, metta, foundation, right? Anchoring. Also, metta is a concentration practice. Because we're going to focus on the idea of metta, the intention of metta, the quality of metta, by using phrases, by using language and ideas and imagination and creativity, it can concentrate the mind. And so usually on the first day of retreat, or the basis of insight practice, mindfulness practice, vipassana, we talk about concentration and investigation. So usually at the beginning there's an emphasis of being concentrated and focusing on the sensations of the in and out breath or the body. But we're going to use concentration in a different way. We're going to concentrate, build concentration with metta. which I find to be a little bit easier because I have a concentration has been really, really big challenging aspect of my practice over the years. For me, concentration creates activation. When I try to concentrate on my breath, when I try to block everything out, I become concentrated on my breath and my concentration doesn't relax, which is what Buddhist concentration is. Focus, relax. Focus, relax. I focus, activate. Focus, activate. 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 Probably because I have a boatload of traumatic stress in my system and can kind of have that myopic tunnel vision experience with concentration. There's other ways to develop concentration or collectedness. I prefer to use metta as a concentration practice because it's concentrate, it's focus and ease. It's focus, I can't focus, I'm not good at focusing, I can't concentrate. It's okay. It's that bringing the mind back and then settling into ease, into metta, into kindness, into friendliness, rather than trying to nail the breath to the floor. Trying to focus on the breath to me is like trying to catch a chicken in the playground. It's like I'm chasing after it. I just can't get the little thing. And if I get my hands on it, I'm gonna get it. Activation, activation, frustration, frustration. So that can often kind of be the quality that we bring to that. So there'll be a way in which we'll focus, we'll incline the mind cognitively by using phrases. May I be at ease, may I be at peace, may I be content in this moment as it is. So there's a cognitive aspect to it. And there's also language and meaning. Language always has meaning associated with it, has symbolism and iconicity, an iconic representation or an interpretation of what it means or what it could mean to be at ease, to be okay, to be simple, to be present, to not be demanding, to be easy to be with, to be cooperative with the mind and body as you're trying to train it. And so it can build this concentration. And it's not just a cognitive concentration, it's an ethical or benevolent or integral, integrity, sila. It's a concentration that's rooted in basic goodness, which to me feels better. There's an emotional component to it. Rather than just be good at focusing on my breath, I'd like to be good at focusing in general. So we're not really, as a concentration, metta is not really about an object, it's about an attitude. And much of meditation is about an object and focusing on an object. But I prefer to not focus so much primarily on a particular object, but be more interested in the quality of awareness that I bring, the attitude of the practice. What is the attitude? The attitude, in a sense, kind of becomes the object. The object becomes this metta, this possibility, this goodness, this sense of being okay. And it doesn't matter what enters the field of metta, if it's walking and seeing a tree, if it's hearing the bird, if it's the leg that falls asleep, if it's the hunger in the stomach, if it's the craving in the mind or the loneliness in the heart. It's all good. It's all okay. It's all allowed. Permission, total permission for everything. To arrive into this attitude, this perspective, this willingness to be open towards whatever might come into your experience. And that creates a field that is more open and more available, and it also can create this kind of concentration or collectedness because the mind is constantly trying to lean in that direction. And so it's also a way of cultivating this chitta, this heart-mind. Whereas if we're just focusing attention, we're just using cognitive skills, which isn't chitta. It's just cognitive, psychological object, focus on the object. But here, there's the focus and there's the object, and then there's all this space between the object and the focus of the object, which is where the metta is. How am I with this? How am I with the pain in the knee? How am I with the person who came in late who's making noise walking around the building? How am I with the long line at lunch? How am I with my tiredness? It's how am I? How am I with? How am I with? How am I with? The object is sort of irrelevant, I think. It's the attitude and the mode of operating that we bring to the objects. And that's the citta, the heart mind, they call it in the third foundation of mindfulness. Basically, the whole Buddhist endeavor is about liberating the citta, which is more of a behavior than an object. Citta is not a noun. It's not a thing that I kind of, there's the citta. The citta is the whole way in which I operate. It's the heart-mind quality. It's the cognitive-emotional, the cognitive-emotional. The harmlessness, the goodness, the friendliness, the okayness, the attitude. And if the attitude is in a metta field, then all the objects are, it doesn't matter what the object is. It's just that. It's just this, that, and the other. It's just whatever arises. And it's not trying to focus on an object and get rid of everything else. It's actually the opposite of that. It's actually opening to everything else, which is also another way to create collectedness, which is more of an open awareness, which is really what mindfulness is opening, mindfulness. Not mindful just thisness, just this, just this. No, this, all of it. So it's a different way of thinking about concentration. And concentration, in a Buddhist sense, Buddhist concentration, if I can use that term, is a relaxed concentration. And when I hear the word concentration in the English domain, I don't think of relaxation. I think, uh-oh, I gotta focus, I become hypervigilant. I need to single in on, I need to block everything out and focus on that object. And then for me, the activation, the activation, the activation. So it might be good to think about what metta is not, because sometimes the best way to define a term is to define the antonym aspect of the term. Metta is not about feeling good. It's not about feeling pleasant necessarily. Because often you'll find in practice you won't feel particularly good, or you won't feel particularly pleasant, or you might feel uncomfortable, you might feel difficult emotion. And then we might think, well, this isn't metta, now I'm doing the metta wrong because I'm having a bad feeling. Where's the metta? Now I'm bad at metta. I'm just going to go back to breathing, but I'm actually bad at that too. Where's the object that I can go to where that's not having a bad feeling? Right. And the irony is, I suppose, the whole Buddhist endeavor is to break free from that perspective in and of itself, to not be dictated by the pleasure-pain dichotomy, to not think that present time awareness should guarantee pleasant time awareness. So it's not about feeling good. It's about being with in a way that is allowing experience to be as it is. May I be at ease with pain. May I be at ease with this doesn't feel good. That kind of shift. It's also not, this doesn't maybe play out so much in the retreat context, but it's not necessarily really about being nice. It's not about things being nice or being nice or being passive or allowing ourselves to be subject to ill will or any harshness, violence, inner violence. It's not about allowing people or situations to overpower us. And the way that that can play out internally is not allowing your mind to push you around. To when you see the judgmental, critical, self-hatred aspects of the mind, it's not just about taking that on and being like, oh, maybe it is. It's about no. No, that's not going down. It's a way of having a almost, dare I say, aggressive boundary. I'm not going to sit here and take that. I'm not going to sit here and listen to that. I'm not going to give in to that aspect of my mind. No. May I be at ease with this experience, but there's a way in which metta can have that quality of stopping, standing, which gives it more of a foundation or a ground. As I stand on the ground of metta and I incline my mind away from that, I'm not letting it get swept away into that. And it's also not about liking everything. It's not about trying to like this thing that's hard to be with. It's not about trying to force yourself into some kind of acceptance or really more approval. It's like, okay, now I have to like everything. Oh, that's going to be hard. Again, it's that recognition. So again, with the awareness component of metta is to recognize that there's some not liking happening right now. You're like, well, I don't like this, and I'm like, I got a lot of not liking going on in my experience right now, and a lot of not wanting going on right now. And not trying to say, oh, I need to be metta, I need to have friendliness, I need to try to like all these unpleasant, difficult parts of my experience. No, that's not it. It's bringing, again, if that becomes an object of practice, it's not, may I be at ease with this not liking, may I be at ease with this not wanting, may I be at ease with this aversion. So you're giving it permission to exist, but you're not forcing yourself or trying to get yourself into a perspective where we feel like we have to approve or like everything that happens. So that there is a balancing component to metta, where we're recognizing what is true, we're recognizing what is coming into the experience or perhaps the process that we might be caught in. We might be caught in some judging or some planning. It's not trying to like or to necessarily accept that, but to say it's okay that's happening. It's okay that I'm having a hard time right now. It's okay that my mind literally will not shut up. It's okay that I don't want to be here. It's okay that I'm having a really great time. It's okay. It's all okay. And not trying to force ourselves into a particular stance or perspective. So here's what the Buddha says. It's always good to see what he has to say about these things. Allegedly, anyway. We're not really sure if he said this at all. But this comes from the Metta Sutta, translated from Ajahn Amaro, and this is his way in which he kind of inclines us into this quality, spirit, attitude of metta. And he says, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, and one who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. Peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud nor demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and safety. So that's the inclining, wishing in gladness and safety. May all beings be at ease, including ourselves. May I be at ease in gladness and safety. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. So that's that externalizing internally, externally. This morning we'll mostly be working with internal metta for ourselves. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from lethargy, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to any fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense craving, is not born again into this world. Sounds like a lot, right? But we want to just try to lean in that direction, right? And part of metta is to being at ease with any of the ways that you're unable to perform these tasks. And so it's a leaning of the heart. It's a leaning of the mind. It's an inclining towards that sense of goodness. And so as we kind of come into the retreat experience, we're really cultivating this metta for ourselves, inward metta. And it's really understood, I believe, that it, as they say, charity has to start at home. So we really need to have this for our internal experience. So the million-dollar question, of course, is, well, how do you access this? Usually by now you're like, okay, you convinced me. Metta is good. I'm willing. Where's the metta switch? Just switch it on. And there's no switch, unfortunately. There's just a sensibility and a way of inclining the mind, and we'll have the opportunity to spend really many, many, many hours here in these few days using this basic root idea as a foundation, as a refuge, as an anchor, as a practice, as a way in which we take this practice into our mindfulness practice or into our Vipassana practice, or really into any practice. It's understood in the Buddhist teaching on Abhidharma or Buddhist psychology that metta as a mind state is appropriate in every moment of experience. Always appropriate. Always useful. Always able to respond and to end suffering. So it's a very good ally. So when we train in this way, accessing our own basic sense of goodness accessing your intention and motivation for even coming on a retreat like this. Much of that intention, that motivation, that desire to come and do this kind of work is usually always rooted in some degree of metta. That we've recognized something about our lives that maybe feels challenging, or ways which we might feel vacant, or we feel something's missing. Then there's a sense of wanting goodness, wanting to improve, wanting to be better to ourselves, wanting to do better in the world and our relationships. And all of that is rooted in this quality of kindness, of metta, of wanting to bring benefit to the world. And of course, that has to start with ourselves. And so when I outline this system of training in a way that's very actionable, and what's the technique, what's the application, one of the things that can be really useful is using, actually what we're doing is we're trying to enter a stream. The Buddha talks about stream enterer, or entering a type of stream. And when he talks about the stream or entering a stream, he's always talking about the Eightfold Path. And so we really begin, not necessarily with the Four Noble Truths, but we begin with the Eightfold Path of right view, of understanding the nature of perception, the nature of experience, and how is it that we see things. And so metta is actually the way we see the world. It's to see with kindness, to see, to actually have that filter installed into your perceptual awareness, to see with goodness, to see with kindness, and to ask ourselves in a very simple way, do we value this quality? Do I hold this view, this perspective? Right. That's where it begins, is just a present moment consideration of like, how important is this to me? How do I view this? How do I hold this? This is right view. This is appropriate seeing. This is seeing with this mindfulness, sati, view completely. Right view is about seeing completely, seeing the whole picture. Can I see the whole picture from this kindness, non-harming, benevolent perception? And if you watch your mind, you don't always view every moment through that lens, do you? Right? It's like, well, that's, you know, we start becoming unfriendly and critical and harsh towards experience. So it has to start with an idea in the mind. It has to. That's where it begins. And then that idea, that view, that perspective, attitude becomes activated into intention, which is the second factor of the Eightfold Path, which is installing or trying to incline my intention, my movement. I want to move my mind in this direction of being at ease. May I be at ease, well-wishing, inclining, leaning. Right? And that's really what when the Buddha talks about karma, that's what karma is. Is there's a karmic action that happens by wishing that out there, by saying, may I be at ease, may I be at peace, that I'm attempting to view experience through that way. And this activates the citta. It's not just this idea of kindness, it's this idea and this prompting, this activation, this movement of the heart in that direction. And again, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to feel good. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to feel like you're doing it right. There's no guarantees here. You just do it. Right? So there's a little bit of blind faith being asked here. Like, just give it a shot for a little while. Rather than be like, well, I did meta one time for 5 minutes and it didn't work for me, so. I listened to one of those talks and did one of those meditations and I just felt confused and weird at the end of it. It's like, well, it might take a little while. So we have all day. Every moment, an opportunity to switch that momentum to head to lean the tree in the proper direction. So eventually what happens is the more we lean in that direction, it falls in that direction, and that's the arising of the Eightfold Path. Our life moves that way. And the more momentum we have, the easier it is to move that way. And then we work with the phrases. Why we use words and images and concepts and ideas is because that's speech, right speech. Right speech actually begins in the way that you talk to yourself in the privacy of your own mind. How much internal not right speech does one have? The way that we talk to ourselves in the privacy of our own mind. I don't know about you, but I see a lot of ill will in my own mind. I see a lot of unkind speech in my own mind. And that, again, that's a way where we don't have to be nice to that. We don't have to take that. We don't have to allow that. So we use these phrases to, it almost is like we're making it real. It's becoming. They oftentimes call this the paradox of becoming, this bhavana. And that's what this is. It's bhavana. It's mental cultivation. It's cognitive, emotional cultivation. It's not meditation. Meditation is not a Buddhist term. That's a very Judeo-Christian, European Enlightenment term. And I have nothing wrong with the term. But we're not. The Buddha didn't teach meditation. He taught cultivation. You cultivate, which means you do something with your cognitive emotional experience. You do something. And that's what citta is. It's you. You think it, you consider it, you have the view, you have the intention, and you do that little movement. That's a very small little movement of mind and heart. You don't just do it and go, okay, cool, the metta's kicked on now, I can relax. You do it, and you do it, and you do it, and you do it until that tree starts to lean and lean and lean and ultimately falls in that direction. And then that just becomes how we live. So we cultivate that. We become. That's becoming. We want to become that. You don't just choose that. There's always an element of choice and desire and decision and all of these mental factors, but we just keep doing it. Right? You keep cultivating that. And that metta seed gets planted, gets taken care of, gets cultivated, sprouts, grows, and produces fruit. And so that's the agricultural, psychological way that the Buddha understood his practice. So it's not like we're meditating on this idea of like, metta, he said be kind, I'm gonna sit here, do the kind thing, man, my legs hurt, there's no Starbucks around here, this is too hard. It's not, when we think about meditation, I think that we think of contemplating or I've always had problems with the term meditation. I still don't. When people ask me what meditation is, I'm like, I don't know. I know what mental cultivation is. I know what sati bhavana is. I know what metta bhavana is. I know that there's a way in which I can activate my experience in a different kind of way. But to me, meditate just means like thinking about. We're not just going to sit here all day and think about kindness. Right? That would make me go crazy. And I've done that many times, so it's just a movement. So there's an effort. There is a little bit of a blind faith aspect to it, of like, you know, you have to do this. It doesn't happen. It's not like, you know, it's strange to think, but it's not like you come on a metta vipassana retreat and you just sit here and then the metta vipassana just arises and you're like, cool, man, this isn't a show. You're not like watching a show. You're actually participating in a ancient art of inclining the mind and the heart in this particular way. So, I hope that's enough. What I'll ask you to do is we'll do some practice and I'll guide you through some practice. But if you feel like it, you can stand up if your legs are a little bit sore, if you want to just kind of stretch for a minute before we do some practice. And we'll sit for probably about 30 minutes or so and then take it out into the rest of the morning. So just taking a minute or so to bring some kindness into the body. And then just slowly allowing yourself to return to whatever posture feels like it's going to be good for you, whether it's a cushion or a chair or exploring some of these postures that I've offered you this morning. And so these will be the instructions that we'll use up through the morning, through the sitting, through the walking, into lunch, up until the 2 o'clock session. So again, just finding a way to sit that feels good and productive. So just starting, just as the Buddha says here, able and upright. So bringing an able and upright position into your experience. Straightforward, strong back, soft front, gentle. Gentle in speech, gentle in mind, gentle in heart. And as you enter or arrive into your own experience, your body, bringing kindness into the body, and all of the experiences of the body, the weight of the body, temperature, your breathing, and allowing the body to be a little bit wide by sending your awareness out through the forest into hearing all of the sounds, the leaves rustling, the birds. And as we take refuge in the body, we also mean taking refuge in this beautiful forest that we're in, being at ease with nature, receiving the air and the oxygen, the sunlight, the sounds. Just absorbing your awareness into all of that present time experience of this natural environment, breathing, the fresh, clean air, all of the oxygen provided by these beautiful trees, the sounds, and just embodying this quality of metta as you sit and breathe and listen. May I be at ease with the beauty of this natural environment. And embodying this ease and metta into this natural environment, expanding into the heart, the emotion, into the citta. May I be at ease with any movement, feeling, emotion. May I be kind in my heart, wishing in gladness and safety. And not just breathing with the body, but breathing with the heart in this quality of ease and goodness. And expanding from the body and heart to the mind, to awareness. Calling up this metta, calling it up. This goodness, kindness. Integrating your system into this natural environment. Breathing, feeling. And inclining the mind by using these phrases. May I be at ease. Thinking of the stillness of a pond or a lake, the stillness of these trees in this beautiful forest, the light reflecting off of the leaves as they change in their color, the sunlight, awareness, receiving that into the mind, the state of mind, may I be at ease. And just letting that phrase reverberate, repeating that, reminding, inclining, may I be at ease. Breathing in and out, feeling the heart, hearing the sounds. The in and out breath rising and falling. And any time the mind gets distracted by any other thought or idea, we just bring it back. May I be at ease. Begin again. May I be at ease. a series of phrases to be repeated. May I be at ease? May I be at peace? Breathing, feeling, hearing. May I be at ease? May I be at peace? May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment, just as it is. May I be content in this moment, just as it is. And letting those phrases repeat in a nice rhythm, watching what arises in the space between the phrase. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment, just as it is. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment, just as it is. I'm just returning back to this field of presence, your body sitting and breathing, the sounds of this forest. This intention of kindness. Activating that good wish, outward, inward. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment just as it is. Anytime the mind wanders or wants to think, just bring it back to that phrase. Just replace. wishing and gladness and safety. May I be at ease with this body, just as this body is right now. May I be at ease with this heart, this emotion, just as it is. And may I be at ease with this mind, just as this mind is. And using these metaphrases to replace, to overcome, to liberate ourselves from any destructive thoughts, and then continuing to incline the mind towards ease and kindness. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment just as it is.